it's hard to be fully present to our lives. We're distracted by the running commentary in our heads, by our plans for the future, by the old stories that hang around from the past. We're distracted by the sun in our eyes, by the news on the radio, by the phones in our pockets. We're lucky if we have a few minutes of every day when we are fully present in our bodies and breathing and here. It is one of the things that I treasure about raising a young child. He is so present, and often when I'm with him, I am also fully present. Yesterday, after the rain ended, we ran races in the park. The rain had cleared the sky, and it was just glorious. Blue and the sunset colors coming in. We ran around the puddles, and we laughed, and I was so aware of how amazing it is to have a body that runs. And that's all there was for that bit of time. Just the beauty and the being. We were both sad when we had to go in and make dinner. For me, it was mostly because then I start to think about the 17 things that need attention. And I have been reading so much about what it does for humans to spend less time with our devices, our screens, our technology. You have probably read some of this also. Probably you, like me, read some of it on your screen. Just to increase the irony of the moment. Here's the fundamental thing. Humans are happier and healthier when we spend less time with our devices. And so it's helpful if we set up tools and rhythms and patterns and relationships that limit how much we use them. So I invite you again this week, if you would like to be part of a small group that meets to talk about how to put limits around how those devices are in our lives, write your name and contact information on a piece of paper and bring it up front here, and I can add your name to the other names to be part of a mindfulness group about how we interact with this powerful stuff. How we interact with these devices and processes that are designed to grab our attention and then make us less present to the world and ourselves. It's a serious battle of wills. And this week, the stakes went up about how much we need to be present to our lives and to the world. The United Nations issued a report on climate change that says that we have less time than they thought to enact crucial changes for the climate. This puts us all in a spiritual as well as scientific and economic crisis point. Have you gotten to read any of the UN report that has come out? I'll read just a little bit from the main webpage on the UN. Checking global warming and preventing some of the worst case scenarios of runaway climate change is still possible, according to the United Nations Secretary General. Limiting temperature rise will require rapid, far-reaching, and unprecedented changes in all aspects of society, especially how we manage land, energy, industry, buildings, transport, and cities. which is a lot. Secretary General at a ministerial meeting on climate finance said in Bali, Indonesia, "This means ending deforestation, planting billions more trees, drastically reducing the use of fossil fuels, and massively increasing renewable energy, switching to climate-friendly, sustainable agriculture, considering new technologies such as carbon capture and storage." In his remarks, the UN chief made a particular call for climate-friendly investments, particularly in the infrastructure sector, and said the next few years are critical and your leadership is needed. He was talking to the ministers of the UN, and he was talking to us, all of us. We have to change how we run our lives, how we get our energy and how we get our food and how we live together. And we have to do it quickly. And we have to change, I think, how we see and participate in the world, how we understand this planet, and how we understand our relationship with the planet. And that's where the spiritual work happens. That's where we are a really important part of the conversation. The scientists had such critical knowledge at this time. And the spiritual perspective makes the change more possible, I think. I have been turning to spiritual leaders and indigenous leaders because I think they have something essential to offer us in this moment. Because they have maintained knowledge of what it means to be present for the earth. One of the thinkers that I have been reading, and I think many of you have been reading and hearing, is Robin Wall Kimmerer. She is a member of the Potawatomi Nation, and she also has a doctorate in plant ecology. She, when she started her, I think actually her undergraduate degree, she said she was really interested in botany because she wanted to know why asters and goldenrod were so beautiful together. And they said, "Oh, it sounds like maybe you should be in art school." And she said, "No, I want to know why the world is so beautiful." And she pursued that question right into the halls of science. And she has found a way to put together her deep spiritual grounding, which comes from her indigenous heritage, with her scientific knowledge. And she is amazing, and that perspective, that ability to weave together the spiritual and the scientific, is a profound gift in this moment. She talks a little bit about what science does and what her other ways of knowing do. And she says that science polishes the gift of seeing, gives us an intense kind of attention for the natural world, a kind of attention that includes quite literally seeing through other lenses. That we might have a hand lens or a magnifying glass or a microscope, and we can see what the human eye cannot see. The microscope lets us see the gorgeous architecture by which it is all put together. She says the scientific instrumentation in the laboratory allows us to look at the miraculous way water interacts with plants. And so science polishes our ability to see. And often it means that we see the materials alone. So she goes on to say, in an indigenous way of knowing, we say we know a thing when we know it not only with our physical senses, but when we engage our intuitive ways of knowing, our emotional knowledge and our spiritual knowledge. And that's what I mean by listening, she says. Listening to the world. We will need all of our capacities to meet the challenge that we are in. We will need the sight of science and the deep listening to other lives and other stories. We will need to learn to listen more deeply to our own inner lives and the lives of the humans we share this journey with. The ways that those connections and that listening have been strained are part of the reason that we are in the predicament we are in. We lost that sense of kinship with all life. And now we have to find it again. Finding kinship and relationship isn't something that is usually recommended to be done quickly and with urgency. And yet, that is how we must do it. We must re-find the stories that connect us, that make us whole, and use those stories of wholeness to build a new life. I have this story from Gloria Steinem, and it's a little tragic that Mary Doan is not here for this story, which I'll explain in just a minute if it doesn't become obvious. So Gloria Steinem studied at Smith College in Western Massachusetts, and she was studying geology, and they went out on a field trip, and she saw a huge turtle hauling itself up out of the Connecticut River. It had come up a couple of embankments and was sort of headed toward the road, and she knew that that was bad, and so she hauled the turtle back down to the river. The turtle fought her the whole way, and she got back to the river with a very mad turtle. And then her professor came by and said, the turtle has probably spent weeks traveling from the river to this higher ground. It's probably looking for a place to lay eggs. And now you've really made it mad by reversing its journey. And she said she learned from that moment that she needed to always talk to the turtle. And you can, it's a wonderful story because you can hold on to that. Mary Doan, our minister of music, has maintained an ongoing conversation with turtles. She is back to doing, in fact, there were turtles sitting on the, not live turtles, but turtles sitting on the piano. And she goes into classrooms with young people with live turtles that she keeps in her home and backyard. So she's always talking to turtles. But what Gloria Steinem said she learned was, first of all, we all have a tendency to impose our will and our perspective on the world around us, and that she uses this story as a reminder to try not to do that. And I see in the story, I see in this moment, the story that the turtle has its own life and is embedded in a whole set of relationships and realities that she couldn't see and that most of us can't see. There's a set of relationships there that we've lost our hold on. And so the work is not only to talk to the turtle, but Listen. Listen to the turtle. Listen to the relationships. Listen to the life that is here that we need to not be stepping on, but listening to. And that means spending more time in the natural world, seeing what it is that turtles do. Of course, her geology teacher had done that, had combined the work of science with the spiritual work of listening and presence, and then knew what the turtle was up to. So we need to build our relationships with the natural world and also with each other. I think that being where we are in this particular spot on the earth, we have a really interesting resource here of being both pretty close to the natural world, very able to get out and talk to turtles, and I still marvel that seagulls fly over my backyard. For some reason, I just find that stunning, that I can be in a backyard, which is so mundane, and a bird from the sea comes over me. I think we have a connection to the natural world that is wonderful. How many of you have kayaks that you can just go right out into the water? And we're also very close to and very involved in the conversation and the happenings of city life. Some of you literally go into the city of Boston and participate in that working life all the time. And if you don't, you are very connected. So I feel like we are a little bit of a in a spot of being able to be translators, people of two worlds, the finance and economy and energy conversation and the connection to the natural world. I don't know how that plays out, but I do notice that we are in an interesting spot here, and that ability to be connected to both things may be particularly powerful in this next phase. So I think we need to deepen our connections to everything and everyone. Even the things that don't seem like things or people we want to deepen our connections with. Those are probably the things to go toward. So this week, I hope you'll take a few minutes every day to listen. Stand in your backyard and listen. Go to the ocean and listen. Stand under a tree and listen. You don't even have to do anything with what you hear. Just practice listening. Because it will ground us, give us the resource to meet the profound changes that must happen in how our economy is organized and how we understand ourselves. If we are listening, then we can comprehend that our destiny is not our own. We are not separate from each other, not from our friends and not from strangers. We're not separate from the stream that's down the hill, from your house. We're not separate from the weather that's happening on the other side of a globe. It is a huge piece of work that has arrived. It's hard to even comprehend it. We're not really made to think about things on this scale. And it's here, and we have to meet it. And I'm pretty sure that the life that we will create, the change that we'll make, will in fact be a better life. I think it will be a more deeply connected life, a more varied life. I think we'll be more in our own lives and breathing. I think there will be a little less frenetic energy in our lives. I don't think it will be an easier life, but I think there will be more joy because we'll have those connections more. So I don't think we have time to figure out exactly the right way to go about it. I don't think we have time to feel ready. I think we may have to follow the Silicon Valley folks who say, fail fast and learn. We have to take some risks and try some stuff out there, and not all of it will work. And we have to believe that our connections are working, and that that web of relationships will find the things that will move us and pull us forward. As the visionary in A Wrinkle in Time says, it's okay to fear the answers, but you can't avoid them. And if you've read A Wrinkle in Time or seen the movie, you know that one of the gifts that the magical beings give the children as they face the darkness is to stick together. That together they can overcome things that they couldn't individually. They can keep each other from giving up. They can help each other think and see new possibilities. And one of those magical beings also says, I give you the gift of your faults. Which is to say that sometimes the things that we think are just problems in us are actually helpful when we're connected to a web of possibilities. So we just have to be courageous and put it all out there and try things. Walk toward each other and toward this crisis with open arms. It's possible if we go together. The work may be hard, but the company will be excellent.